Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Pass.
Welcome to the Ghost Story, guys. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Paul Bestall.
This is a show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 180. Five? That sounds right. We'll go with five.
Yeah.
There we go.
Woo!
And we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about, but can never quite reach. Paul Bestall, my friend, how you doing?
I'm all right. It's Easter. There's a lot going on that's not Easter related, but I'm busy, and I'm really looking forward to going to see Late Night with the Devil.
Oh, man. I went, what night did I go? I went not last night, but three nights ago. I saw that, and then I saw Ghostbusters the night after that. And I mean, Late Night with the Devil, I loved. I liked Ghostbusters. I didn't love it, but I both were worth my time. And like I said, Late Night with the Devil, man, oh, that was great shit.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. The last time I went to see a horror film at the showroom, I had to get a taxi from there to the pub because I wasn't walking the dark streets.
What movie did that to you?
Ginger Snaps.
Ah, that's fair. That's fair. A Canadian classic, Ginger Snaps.
I hate werewolves.
And yet you watch so many werewolf movies.
That's why. It's the only thing that causes me to be afraid.
All right. Okay. I'll keep that in mind. Hang on. Ordering fursuit. A lot of sex stuff coming up. Not what I wanted. But anyways, fursuit ordered.
In the genre of horror, it's only werewolves that give me palpitations. I can cope with everything else.
Fair enough. Late Night with the Devil is not scary, you know, it's I don't think it's going to disrupt your sleep, but it's just a really well-executed horror flick. There's some moments in there, some gore moments especially, I did not see coming. So, and folks, this isn't a paid ad or anything. We just, you know, we're just horror nerds. I mean, the one we sent Cannell on Talk Spooky, that wasn't paid. We just got a free ticket. But this, you know, I actually paid for myself like an asshole.
Yeah. I'm going with somebody who doesn't really know much about horror in the modern era, really. So it's going to be quite interesting to see if he needs support afterwards.
There we go. Yeah, show us on your psyche where the film touched you.
Yeah, because Train to Busan absolutely terrified him. Mind you, it would do. Cause it's, for me, it's probably one of the best films of the last 20 years.
You know, I've never seen it, but that's just because after 28 weeks later, I just cannot enjoy zombie things. That movie scared me so bad that I just swore off zombie shit. I've seen The Odd Thing since then, but I just have not been able to enjoy zombie entertainment really since 28 weeks later essentially beat my enthusiasm out of me.
It's one of the greatest zombie films ever made.
It sure is.
Busan.
Oh, Busan. Okay, well, maybe I'll work my way up to it one of these days.
With a heartbreaking final act as well.
Now, see, that's always a problem. Once I get emotionally involved, then I'm terrified and I'm crying.
Yeah, it'll come. It's brilliant. It really gut-punched me when I watched it the first time.
All right. Well, on this episode, we're not aiming for any emotional gut punches.
You never know.
Well, okay, there is a 9/11 story at the end of the show. But that is because this is our New York episode. And we have been putting this off for a long time. And that's primarily because the stories from New York, most of them suck. There aren't a lot of great New York ghost stories, weirdly. You know, I shouldn't say that. It's been hard to find good first-person encounter stories. You know, there's a lot of legends. A long time ago, I interviewed Andrea Janes, who is the owner of Burrows of the Dead, which is New York City's most popular ghost tour business. And so there are stories there. But again, the kind of thing we trade in here, which is, you know, we go up and try and find stories online of one person, one experience. There aren't many of them, which has always kind of driven me nuts. But I finally decided, I went to Toronto last weekend for my birthday, and we've already done a Haunting of Toronto episode. So I thought, all right, well, we're going to do the big city. We'll do the Big Apple. We'll see what we can put together. And as luck would have it, a listener sent in a story from Ground Zero, which of course was the site of the September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center. And I, at the same time, was listening to the book, The Only Plane in the Sky, an oral history of 9/11. And I thought, well, this seems interestingly timed. Maybe we should go ahead with this. So, like I said, we're not going to lean too much into that. It's going to be part of the last story we tell, but we're going to keep it light. We're going to have a good time, as we always do here on the Ghost Story. We always have a good time. I'm sure whether you do or not, I don't care. But
I'm always having a good time on Qualide.
Yeah, exactly. I love how you say Quaaludes.
Qualides.
Exactly. Yep. Nope. Never change.
It's like Worcestershire sauce for the mind.
Yes. I'm just going to say yes. You have to see the wild look in his eyes, folks. You can't disagree with him when he's like this. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm just so excited about Easter.
If I had 4 days off in a row, I'd be excited too.
I've got six.
Even more so then.
Yeah. Long weekend.
Right, of course.
I'm not back till Wednesday. Woo!
Amazing. I forgot that you guys have actual holidays.
I've got 38 days next year.
Jesus holiday. Christ.
That's not including the special day off we'll get when we win the football in the summer again.
Keep that hope alive. Before we get into the stories, I'll just say, if you're looking for a history of New York City, you're not going to find it here. But if you do want that, I cannot recommend more the books Gotham, A History of New York to 1898 and Greater Gotham, A History of New York City from 1898 to 1919. The first is by Edwin Burroughs and Mike Wallace. The second one's just Mike Wallace. If you at all want a history of New York City, you cannot do better, I think, than Gotham and Greater Gotham. Those are goddamn tomes. They are huge books. I think the audiobook is something like 60 hours of each. Substantial stuff. You cover a lot of ground. And if you want a little bit of color to go with your history, check out Round Manhattan's Rim, which came out in 1933. Yes, not like that. It's a very different book. I see that look on your face, you animal. Anyways, Brad, what was I talking about? Round Manhattan's Rim. Yeah. By the journalist Helen Worden. Her and a friend, they just went around Manhattan in 1933. Yeah, I know. Manhattan was very busy that year. Lovely lady. He just can't stop. He can't help himself. You should see him. He's just falling apart, guys.
Just went around the rim, didn't
Yeah, they? That's it, you know. That's all you can get. Always get permission. Always get permission.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what happens when you end prohibition. All bets are off, mate.
We got to do something. It was the depression. Oh, maybe that was the depression. Anyways, nope. Moving on.
There's a depression inside the room.
Yep, we're moving. Nope. We're going to sail right past. This has gone away off the rails already. Anyways, welcome. If this is your first episode of Ghost Story, guys, welcome. But yes, I'm not saying the name again, but by Helen Worden, it's out of print now. You can get used copies for pretty cheap. And again, it's just a street level view of the city in a time where you don't typically hear a lot of information about. So those are some reading suggestions before we get going. And, before this goes any further off the rails, we should thank our patrons.
This one's for the patrons.
Patrons, after all that, the show's probably going to be canceled by somebody on the internet. But until it is, we're going to keep doing what we do, which we can only do because of you. So thank you. For real though, guys, without our patrons and Apple Podcast subscribers, we couldn't pay the bills. We couldn't do any of this. So you truly make the show go. Everyone who downloads the show helps make us who we are, but patrons and Apple Podcast subscribers You are really, really integral to the Ghost Story Guys, so thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And of course, we'd like to thank all our patrons, but right now, we're going to thank the latest ones. They are...
Kayla Jacobs.
Jack River Witch.
S.J.G.
Samantha Halisi Cataneo.
Dominic Schlick.
Lilith Hollow.
Rebecca Glass.
Again, guys, thank you so, so, so much for your generous support of this show. I love this job. We love doing what we do, and you guys allow that to happen. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll wait till the end of the show to tell you about all the cool stuff you get. You also get the Ghost Force shout out in this episode. But we will say,
woo.
Yes, sir. But we will say, for $1 a month, you get an ad-free feed. And who doesn't want that? Ads suck. They're garbage. Really, truly, they're garbage. If we didn't have to have them in the show, we would not. But the world is the world, and so we have them. But for $1 a month, you don't have to. And again, that's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys, or sign up to GSD Premium via Apple Podcasts. One last thing, shout out to our composer, Rainy Days for Ghosts. Rainy Days for Ghosts is a project of film journalist and musician Harper Smith. You can find more of Harper's work at rainydaysforghosts.bandcamp.com or by searching for Rainy Days for Ghosts or Street Witch on streaming platforms everywhere. They are streaming courtesy of Night Harvest Recordings, the Ghost Story Guys house label. All right, well, New York thinks it's the center of the universe, but it has yet to be featured on this show. So if it truly wants to ascend to that esteemed place, we better get to the stories. We start with a listener story from AC. AC says, in September, some friends and I were visiting New York. One night, one friend attended a concert on Coney Island and then returned to our Airbnb, very drunk and very stoned, long after the rest of us had gone to sleep and immediately headed for the fridge. The next day, he told me that while he was looking for something to munch on, he suddenly felt like someone he couldn't see was standing next to him. He knew he wasn't sober, but he couldn't shake the feeling that there really was someone or something standing there. We laughed at the idea, and I teased him about what a stoner he is and then forgot about it. 2 nights later, it was my turn to sleep on the couch. I lay down on my side and closed my eyes, trying to get tired enough to fall asleep. After a couple of minutes, I felt someone very gently sit by my feet. The way the weight settled onto the couch cushion felt exactly like someone trying to sit down without disturbing me. I was still wide awake, so I knew it couldn't have been any of my friends because they would have had to pass me to reach that side of the couch. Just to be sure, I glanced over my shoulder to where a head should be if it was indeed a person, and saw nothing. I wiggled my toes, then my feet, and they were restricted by whatever weight was on top of the blanket. I didn't feel the need to sit up and look because I was sure I wouldn't see anything. Besides, I didn't feel spooked or scared or sense a presence. I felt absolutely nothing except the weight by my feet. I simply thought to myself, huh, the stoner was right. Cool. And then closed my eyes again. The thing was there until I fell asleep maybe 10 minutes later. Later in the trip, I asked my friend to describe his experience again and what he felt while the thing was standing next to him. He said he felt nothing other than someone standing close. I then told him about my late-night couch buddy, and if he wasn't spooked before this validation of his experience, he definitely is now. Thanks for sharing that, AC. That's very, very fun. AC kind of describes in the email, this is my boring ghost story. I don't think it's boring at all. I think it's a classic ghost story.
Absolutely.
I will say, though, that it actually bears a striking resemblance to one of my sole experience with Ativan. When I was a younger man, I was going through some anxiety stuff, and the doctor said, well, look, why don't you try Ativan? And I'd never heard of it. And I have had like a rocky history with pharmaceuticals as far as that stuff goes. Like, I had a very bad experience with Paxil a long time ago, but I thought I'll try anything. And it was a very low dosage, but I had one. And all of a sudden, I felt like there was someone standing right next to me. And so I went back to the doctor. He said, so how did the Ativan work? I said, are you supposed to hallucinate? The look he gave me suggested that no, you were not supposed to hallucinate. He said, maybe just don't take those again. Yeah, deal. Agreed.
I think, to be fair, it's nice to get a very traditional ghost story sometimes, and that seems to be exactly it.
Yeah. Sometimes, man, you don't want to stick around with Rocky Road or Peanut Brittle. You just want some vanilla ice cream, some good vanilla bean ice cream. And that, as far as I'm concerned, was the vanilla bean ice cream of ghost stories. Although it did remind me of a story, and actually this is like not really ghost related, but it reminded me of something that happened. So years ago, I was in London, not the London I live in now, the good one. I was there staying at a hostel with my cousin, and there was this guy, an American guy we met there, a guy named Kyle. And he was there because he wanted to go see They Might Be Giants. They were playing across the city. And so he wanted to go see him while he was in London. So he went to go do that. And, you know, it was a good show, all that shit. And we kind of tangentially kept in touch on Facebook. And as you do, right? Just kind of you're aware of each other's existence. Well, he ended up, and I've mentioned this before, he ended up on MasterChef in the United States. He ended up on that TV show. And he was really happy about it. He made it fairly far. He didn't win, but he did pretty well for himself. But the pisser, and this is what really kind of, I mean, not that I ever thought, boy, I want to be famous, because I don't. But I mean, yeah, I want to be adored. I mean, I don't do this for my health, but you know, I don't want to be famous because that sounds like hell. And this is proof that this is hell, because Kyle seems like a good dude. He was on a TV show, like because he was a barbecue guy and talented chef. That's it. That's his thing. He was on a TV show. And I just saw on Facebook a little while ago that poor bastard had to post that him and his wife are going through a divorce, and they had not intended to tell anyone until everything was done, but some fucking media outlet got word that former MasterChef contestant Kyle is getting divorced, and they ran a story. How gross is that?
Yeah, I've seen enough about over the years with other people that I know with the media to know that I would like to be successful and not famous. And also, I have far too many skeletons in my closet that I could fill up many a gutter rag. I'm just glad mobile phone cameras didn't come out till the end of the noughties. That's all I'm gonna say.
Oh yeah. That was there was some stuff, Paul. There was, as with all of us from that era, there was stuff that I am glad is gone into the sands of history.
Reminds me of the time I went into a radio shack and just get farting. Apparently it was illegal.
Well, that's, I've heard that. Very much against the law. Folks, if you want any of that to make sense, you have to listen to the patron bonus. That's a little inside baseball. But again, patreon.com/ghost story guys. Thanks very much, AC.
Synchronicity and clairvoyance. Since I was a kid, I've had several instances of weird synchronicities, experiences where I felt I could connect with others through my mind and have predicted future events. This isn't something I can actively force my mind to do, but it seems to happen either randomly or around times of intense emotion. Some of my experiences include: I once ran into a classmate, let's call him Mark, whilst I was walking around London, and we're both from New Jersey. I was never close to this person, and would describe him more as an acquaintance. There was no emotional attachment, and I honestly never gave him a thought. He was just someone I saw every once in a while in classes. Well, whilst travelling through the United Kingdom, I suddenly started to think about Mark. I had this really weird feeling as if my brain was connected to his brain by a radio signal. The feeling was always sort of in the background for a few days until, bam, we spotted each other on the street. It was weird to think that if anything different had happened that day, like stopping to tie my shoe or taking a different route, we might have never have run into each other. After this incident, the feeling of connectedness had gone away. Years later, whilst waiting for a subway in New York City, I had a feeling about my ex. As the train approached, I said to myself, Neil's going to be on this train and he'll see me, but I won't see him. About 30 minutes after I arrived at my stop, I got a Facebook message from him saying he saw me getting off the train, had been thinking about me, and just wanted to catch up. Honestly, there are so many people living in New York City, and I had just moved to a new neighbourhood, which is why it seemed even crazier that our paths had crossed. Another experience occurred about a couple of years after breaking up with a different guy. I was really heartbroken over the end of this relationship, and it took a long time to put it behind me. Before we broke up, we used to go to this French restaurant on the Lower East Side. It was a very recognisable place because there was a French bulldog on their sign. The guy who owned the place was an eccentric older Frenchman who always wore a red beret. I had kind of attached a special meaning to this place because it symbolised the time I'd spent with my ex. So anyway, 2 years after the breakup, and we were both living in different neighbourhoods of New York, and hadn't seen each other since. One night, as it was softly raining outside, I had this crazy feeling as though I was going into a deep trance. I laid in bed for a while with the strange sense that my consciousness would turn down like a dial, and my brain was a radio receiving frequencies. The next morning I got an email from my ex. He wrote to me that that night he'd been walking under a bridge in Williamsburg when he ran into a Frenchman wearing a red beret who needed directions. As you can guess, it turned out to be the guy who owned the restaurant we used to visit, and this incident had prompted my ex to write to me. We never got back together, so I can't say that there was any purpose to this synchronicity, but I still can't get over the coincidence. The last experience I'll share is by far the craziest. One morning I stayed home from school because I was sick, and I slept in really late that day. Sometime that morning, I dreamt that I was in some sort of space vehicle. I was wearing a flight suit and had dark hair, but I've always been very blonde. Suddenly, there was a huge explosion, and I was falling out of the vehicle and into outer space. I remember being so terrified because I knew I was going to die. When I woke up, I was very emotional. Later that afternoon, I turned on the news and saw that the Columbia space shuttle disaster had occurred that morning, roughly around the same time I had my dream. Mind you, before seeing the news, I had no idea there had been a recent space shuttle launch. I had known nothing about Columbia, and it was shocking. So did I astral project? Had I had a moment of clairvoyance? Who the hell knows? So yeah, throughout my life, there have been these crazy synchronicities or moments of seeming telepathy or clairvoyance. I like to think that everything happens for a reason, but I honestly can't attribute any meaning to these experiences because they had no impact on my life. I do wonder if it's related to some phenomena in nature that isn't yet known. I'm a big fan of weird coincidences and synchronicities, I have to say.
Oh yeah, 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 I love that kind of stuff. That's why I wasn't totally sure about including this one, just because it's not really that New York-centric. Although, as I mentioned, there actually aren't a ton of first-person New York-centric stories out there anyways. But I just am so into that sort of that kind of thing, especially like when dreams seem to have some sort of basis in reality.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. There's a brilliant episode in Arthur C. Clarke's World of Strange Powers, I think it is, which is entirely focusing on people who had premonitions of strange events, which is fascinating, some of them. There was one guy who eventually ended up getting investigated by the FBI because he kept writing to air companies saying there's going to be a plane crash. And so they were convinced that he was actually a bomber.
Maybe he just worked for Boeing.
Well, yeah. But I think he predicted 2 or 3 crashes. And he was to the point that they were convinced that there was more to it than him just trying to be a good Samaritan. And he said, I wish I'd never got in touch with him because I've got harassed ever since. But it's a strange one. I mean, over here, we obviously had the Aberfan disaster in the 60s. And that saw numerous reports of people both indirectly and directly involved in that disaster, as we were talking about disasters earlier, and obviously the horrific events that happened there due to the short-sightedness of industrial companies, that there were several of the children who died in that disaster had done strange drawings or said strange things to their families. I think one of the most jarring ones was, I think one of the children was looking out the window and they just turned around and said, well, I'm not afraid of dying because I know. And they said 2 of their friends' names would be with them. And they all died. One of the children drew like a picture of them laid on the floor and this big black wave coming towards them, which sadly is exactly what happened. And it forced a gentleman, I've forgotten his name, was it Peter Farley? He ended up setting up the Premonitions Bureau on the back of this, because obviously all of these things were reported after the event, and often with premonitions, are they really premonitions if we only know about them afterwards? And so he ended up creating this bureau and advertised it, and basically had numerous people then contact him and say, right, I've had this feeling. And so he was trying to collate them to see what was happening. And ironically, one of them ended up predicting his death.
Oh.
Inadvertently. It was slightly off, but he was a young man. He died very suddenly and very unexpectedly. And one of his contributors told him that he would die very unexpectedly. I think he had an aneurysm and he died at home.
Oh, Jesus.
Completely out of the blue. But yeah, and that's a fact. And that episode of Arthur C. Clarke features some really, like, one woman was convinced she'd seen a news broadcast of a disaster at a British power station. And so told people. And then when they watched the later version of the news, there was no mention of it.
Hmm.
And she was completely befuddled. And then 4 days later, it happened. She saw it. She was convinced she'd seen it on the news, but it didn't actually happen for another 4 days. So she'd basically seen the news from 4 days earlier, or 4 days later.
Fascinating. Jesus. What a horrible... Honestly, of all the possible powers I could have, premonition is the last one I want.
Yeah. Her name was Leslie Brennan.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. I hadn't spotted that. Strange coincidence. You've never been to Flixborough, have you?
I'm going to say no now.
But yeah, and that's a really good... It's allegedly available on YouTube, that episode.
Okay.
And I recommend if you're interested in premonitions and clairvoyance and things, there are some cases on that make you think, what? This is odd.
Yeah. Well, I mean, funny enough, this came up. I was on Paratalk recently talking to Reeves, and this came up. We were talking about these kind of things, about premonitions and sort of find how you receive sometimes information, but it's imperfectly formatted. You know, your brain tries to interpret in a way that makes sense for you. And the example I always use is in 2018, I took my mom to LA for the first time. She'd never been. And the night before we left for the trip, I had a dream that I was watching a movie with a bunch of friends, and the actress Bella Thorne was there watching a movie with us, which I thought was weird, but whatever, right? Because I don't normally dream about people I know, or especially I don't dream about celebrities, but she was just there. She was there sitting there watching this movie. And then I went to the Arclight, which used to be in Hollywood. I think it's closed now, but I used to like going to see movies there, and they were showing the black and white version of Mad Max Fury Road. So I had my ticket, started walking towards the cinema, and there was a crowd blocking the hallway. Oh no, for Christ's sakes. And who was standing there? Who was the focus of that crowd? It was the actress Bella Thorne. She was there for the premiere of one of her new films. Mm. And, you know, again, just a random, you know, random. I mean, it could just be a total coincidence, but, you know, I think my brain kind of just interpreted that as best it could, because it, back then, I didn't always go see movies when I was out of town by myself. There was something I kind of have started doing in more recent years. And the idea of like bumping into someone when they're like doing a promotional thing, again, just not on my radar. Again, you interpret it as best you can. And the same thing prior to going to LA in 2015, I had that dream about being in a city, being in LA actually, where I'd never been at the time, and getting stopped by two cops who weren't going to let me go forward because there was a gang war happening on the other side of that underpass. And then, you know, that in 2015, I went to LA and two cops stopped me from getting on the overpass because there was a shooter up on the freeway taking pot shots at people, you know, and it seems like you just interpret, your brain kind of interprets as best it can.
I mean, there's one here from ABBA fan that strangely I've just been flicking through, because when I saw the script, I thought that reminds me of something. So I'm just going to read this one of them, because there were dozens apparently. Please. Obviously, 21st of October, 1966, there was 116 children, 28 adults killed at the Aberfan school disaster, which, for anybody who doesn't know, a massive heap of slag, which was the detritus from the mining industry in the Welsh Valleys, was basically like a giant mountain, and they'd built it on top of a spring, and nobody knew this. Well, they did know. This is what all came out afterwards. And basically it was sliding down the mountain, and they were trying to cover it up and say, oh no, it'll be all right. We'll just ignore it. But it had been raining like bilio for a week. So everything was saturated. So it was a ticking time bomb, and it hit just after the school had started. So everybody was in class. Everybody was seated. And And one of the parents revealed afterwards that her daughter, Errol Mae Jones, lived actually in the valley. And the day before, she'd woken in the morning and said, "Mummy, you must listen to my dream. I dreamed I went to school and there was no school there. Something black had come down all over it." Of course, Errol Mae Jones was one of the Aberfan victims.
Good God, that gave me chills.
And that, you know, it's not a, that's not a unique story when it comes to Aberfan. And it was that that set off this whole premonitions bureau.
Right.
Which also had a very strange thing. But yeah, if you can check that episode, I mean, some of them are quite, send a shiver up your spine. But Aberfan, I know Richard McLean Smith on Unexplained did a brilliant deep dive a couple of years ago on Aberfan. And he also ended up doing like a follow-up episode where he talks about the premonitions bureau. And that covers some of the stories that the parents and relatives put forward after Aberfan had finished saying what their children had been telling them the day before and some of the drawings and things. And if you really want to sort of scare yourself a little bit about the power of premonition, then that's a brilliant example of it.
Very cool. Well, before we move on, speaking of having examples of these things, we actually had a listener email that we had to cut for time from episode 184. And it's relevant here, so I thought I'd share it. This one's from Joe. And Joe says, "It was October of 1990 when I first moved to Victoria with my dad and stepmom." Of course, Victoria's a town in Western Canada. It's where I lived for the last 16 years. "We stayed with my stepmom's brother and his family in the Quadra area until we could find a place of our own. I started going to Vic High and met a girl that happened to live in the same area, and she showed me around the school and the neighborhood. A few months later, my dad and stepmom found a house for us in a different neighborhood, Saanich. That meant I had to learn a whole new bus schedule to get home from school. My boyfriend at the time was more than happy to show me the way because he just happened to live in the same area. Usually he would drive me home from school, but we knew eventually I'd have to bus. If he was sick or had to leave early or whatever, we picked a Friday to take the bus. We both had no idea how crazy things would get on this particular bus ride. I have to add that my boyfriend was in the local CB club and had many CB buddies. And for our younger listeners, CB radio was how you kept in touch with people at a distance before the internet. Yeah, look it up. It's a whole thing. But it's radio is what you need to know if you don't know already. I wasn't in the club, Joe says, and didn't know about it since this was a new relationship. We'd only been dating for about 3 weeks at this point. We got on the bus. He was showing me some of the landmarks to look out for, the things that would make it easier for me to know where I was. We were getting closer to our stop, and I got a very strange feeling that came over me. It was almost like I was in a trance. I told him we had to get off at 7-Eleven because Blueberry was there. My boyfriend asked me, "What?" I repeated myself, saying we had to go see Blueberry at 7-Eleven. My boyfriend asked, "Blueberry, as in Sam?" I said, "Yes, Sam." And sorry, folks, again, younger folks, if you don't know this, CB radio, you had call signs. Again, similar to social media handles, you had call signs. So this was this person's call sign.
Breaker, breaker.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm just realizing as I'm reading this, I'm like, shit, they might have no fucking idea what CB radio is. The ringing of the bell shook me out of whatever trance I was in, and my boyfriend was grabbing my hand to get off the bus. We got out of the doors, and I was confused because this was not an area I was familiar with. I figured my boyfriend was just going to grab a drink and we would walk the rest of the way home. It must be close to my street, and I just went with it. What the hell did I know? I was new to the area. We went into 7-Eleven, and my boyfriend immediately clapped the back of a tall guy's shoulder and said, "Hey, Sam, it's been a while. How are you?" Sam asked who I was, and my boyfriend started laughing and said that we obviously knew each other and to stop being funny. Sam and I were both confused, as we didn't know each other, nor we'd ever seen each other before. Sam and I tried to explain that to my boyfriend, and he looked a little pale. He grabbed a drink, and he was visibly shaking. Sam offered to drive us the rest of the way to my house, which was about 10 minutes away. While we were in the car, my boyfriend told us about what happened on the bus, and what I said. It was almost unbelievable, but I knew it was true because I was aware of speaking, but had no recollections of the words I was saying. Like I wasn't the operator of my body, if that makes sense. Sam and I were both very creeped out. We all sat in silence for a while before the awkward laughing started. I must have looked like Gilly the Gobshite with my mouth hanging open and pure fear in my eyes. I can't say I've ever had anything like that happen to me before or since, and I'm not sure I'd like to. And it's kind of the same idea, right? It's just this premonition that you have no control over. And, you know, I think the initial author said something which I think is interesting because I think we tend to associate, like, we tend to think in terms of narrative. So when this stuff happens, we try to find like a bigger reason. And I sometimes don't think there is.
No, you're right. I think often the human mind tries to think, well, there must be a reason for me having this thought or saying these things or dreaming about this particular situation or this person. And I think that's the more confusing aspect, that there isn't a reason for it. It's just happened.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so much of this shit, it's because we don't even know how it works, just that it works. And even there are going to be people who will fight tooth and nail to suggest that, you know, it doesn't work at all. Like the American Atheist Convention is happening down in Philadelphia this weekend. And I guarantee you that if I were to say that in there, I'd get torn apart like Tommy Lee Jones in the prison scene in Natural Born Killers.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The apartment. Can apartments be haunted? My girlfriend and I moved into a new apartment in June of this year. It is a complex built in 1976, so by most metrics, the buildings are not old. I've had some experiences in the past I suppose were paranormal. Sometimes I was seeking them, big mistake, and sometimes I wasn't. I never saw anything, but I hear and feel a lot. Just enough to know something's with me, but I don't ever perceive it directly. So, yes, when I talk to them, I hear silence back. My great-aunt's house was always fun to visit growing up. But after she died, it stood empty, and my family lived in the area, so we were often there dividing up the inheritance, as it were, mostly chucking or selling stuff. But every time I was there, I felt something. It was an old house, built sometime in the mid-19th century. There was a bedroom off the kitchen that always really spooked me. I asked my mother once if she ever felt anything at the house, and she mentioned the bedroom off the kitchen, too, as it was well known that the room was just creepy. We had never talked about it before. My father is an ardent denier of paranormal activity as a whole, but my mother and I have certain perceptions. And I had dreams. Lots of dreams. The people that built the house and owned it for generations are in the graveyard across the street. It was just a generally creepy place. Old house smelling of mothballs and stove gas, right across from the graveyard. I've had this creepy feeling elsewhere. Actually, I often feel it around living, breathing people. It's the vibe feeling off, like there's a person there and they're watching you. But aside from this, I've never seen poltergeist activity or anything. I visited a graveyard here in my part of New York City that is closed and known to be haunted. My mother took us there when we were little because we were into the Ghostbusters. She was a hospice nurse, and death and ghosts were kind of accepted by us. My mother was used to people dying. She's very strong and excellent at helping families grieve in healthy ways. I respect her a lot. She has her beliefs about how everything works, but otherwise is unsuperstitious. So when she took us to the graveyard that day, we just stood at the gate and looked in, and my brother and I started to feel sick to our stomachs. My mom was standing there saying, "See? It's quiet, peaceful. Nothing's going on here." She was looking at our side of things, but I felt something. Didn't my dumbass go back there alone one time in my mid-20s? This was the phase where I was looking for trouble because I was curious and manic. I became obsessed with the prospect of seeing the spirit world. I pulled the car to the side of the road and stood at the gate looking in. I was standing there, outside the gate, and I saw nothing. Quiet, peaceful. But what I felt was that there was some kind of pull or vortex that I could easily be sucked into it, like I was entering a whirlpool at the bottom of a drain. I was afraid, but that's what I wanted. I was thinking about going in, but I knew there was more danger than anyone else could actually see. I just knew it was there. Then a cop showed up. He said, "Hey, how you doing?" I noticed right away that he didn't say, "What are you doing?" but "How are you doing?" He must have known I was off. I looked at him. I hadn't even heard him roll up. Do you know why I stopped you? Had he been with me this whole time and I just never saw him? I was following you before you stopped here and you swerved off the road. I had no memory of this. At the time, I assumed he had seen me do something I wasn't aware of, which has happened from time to time for my entire life when I become preoccupied with something. He said, "You shouldn't be here." "Why not?" I asked. I expected him to mention something paranormal, but then he just said something about private property and the city doesn't want people in there, and every once in a while they have to swing by and kick a bunch of people out. I said I was sorry, I didn't know that, and he let me leave. Then we both just left, and I went home. And, you know, I kind of felt like he had saved me. Whatever the reason, I don't know. Maybe he just knows people come to this place and get sick. Or maybe he was just trying to enforce some arcane property law. Needless to say, I felt like I had a passenger in my car on the way home, and it followed me into my parents' basement where I was living at the time. I felt an abject fear every time I was down there. I tried everything to get rid of it. Again, I never saw anything. No poltergeist activity, no weird noises. I just felt it being with me. In this apartment here in Queens, we just hear things. It feels like it's on the other side of the wall. Big bangs, footsteps. She feels a cold presence. I feel nervous but way more collected because I'm medicated now. I do not underestimate how much my untreated mental illness may have played a part in my perceptions when I was younger, but now I'm pretty much symptom-free and still think it's possible there's something here with us. That said, it doesn't feel threatening yet. Often, I will hear footsteps outside the bathroom door, or I'll hear my girlfriend coming up behind me, but she's not there, she's in the other room. Those footsteps were right there. We feel like we're being watched sometimes. She is home alone all day while I'm at work, and she says she experiences more of these things during the day when I'm not there. One day I stayed home from work and listened, and there were more noises. It's right on the brink of, I don't know, but maybe. The graveyard thing just sounds like something I would do, where I just become fixated on a place, and then I later find out, you know, something terrible has happened there.
Well, I think the thing about graveyards and churchyards is that more often than not, terrible things don't happen in them, really. They're usually just a place for the deceased. So
sure.
It's always unusual when you discover that there has been something terrible occur. I mean, obviously there have been incidents over the years. I'm sure most countries will have a terrible story about someone being attacked or whatever in such a place. But it's almost as if, I mean, they are, I find them quite mesmerizing anyway. I find them fascinating areas because I'm very interested in them. I like to spend time wandering around and looking at the names and looking at the professions that they used to put on them in the old days. And so I find it quite an enriching way of learning your local history or a history of a local area that you've perhaps not been to before.
Oh yeah, I think graveyards are really interesting. I mean, you know, we've sort of said this before on the show, but when Nick and I go to a new place, we will, there's an app called Find a Grave, where you can help people locate the graves of their loved ones. So they'll put in, you know, so-and-so is allegedly buried here. We'd love a photograph of this. And you can go to the graveyard and take a picture for them. And we've done this before in the U.S. We've done that here in Canada, a couple different places. It's just kind of a fun, nerdy thing to do. You get to see some different graveyards. Sometimes you see some really cool stuff. And we've never had any problems, you know, never had even anything remotely haunted has happened. I looked around and I don't know that this is what the person was talking about, but apparently the Woodlawn Cemetery in, I believe it's in Brooklyn. Sorry, no, it's in the Bronx. Yeah. But apparently that is famously haunted. But I don't know for sure if that's what they were talking about. The person, when we found the story, they only mentioned New York. They didn't specifically mention which graveyard. I will say, though, New York City has, I think, some of the most photogenic graveyards I've ever seen. The only thing that comes close is New Orleans, and you're a lot hell of a, from what I understand, you're much less likely to get shot checking out a New York graveyard.
Well, it's the same here. There's some notable ones, obviously. Infamous Highgate Cemetery here in the UK.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Has some wonderful mausoleums and statues amongst its other notable historical incidents. Alleged or otherwise.
Will you tell me they weren't real vampires, Paul?
I don't know. There was a lot of strange things going on there. Whether or not it involved any real-life vampires is a different kettle of fish, but I think if people are going around desecrating corpses and killing animals, that's a different kettle of fish entirely, regardless of anybody running about with fangs.
I mean, that's fair. As with most things, I think you're better off being afraid of the living.
Yes, yes. I mean, clearly it excited people. That's why a massive mob turned up with sticks and shovels and pickaxes after it had been mentioned on the local news and the police had to evacuate the area.
Yep. Again, I'm far more afraid of a crowd. When I went to go see Leonard Cohen at the O2 in London years ago, the crowd, as it was leaving, they hadn't yet opened the gates to the tube station. So the crowd was surging against the door waiting for it to open. And I had never been caught up in a crowd like that. And I was a hell of a lot more scared in that crowd of people than I've ever been in a haunted location.
Yes, you've never known what fear is unless you suddenly feel yourself being moved by a large body of people around you and you can't do anything.
You ever want to feel how small you are in the grand scheme of things? That's a way to find out.
Yes, they're very good at sending you in a kind of zigzaggy way out of events in London these days. So you get your steps in and get to a tube station quite safely.
Oh, that makes a hell of a lot more sense than what they did that night.
Mm. Certainly did the last time when I went to Finsbury Park. We went to, though, Richard and Bernie ended up going the wrong direction and got on the wrong train.
Oh, no.
We ended up getting home before they did, and they lived in London.
Oh, Jesus.
We were back in the hotel, and I think they didn't get in for another hour after that, and they'd left before us.
Oh, so what time did they get back?
I think they got in just after one, and we were back for about midnight.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah. I mean, we were only four stops down on the tube.
So right.
They weren't going much further. I think they were going five stops the other way, but they ended up getting an hour after us and they got on the train before. They'd just gone the wrong one.
I've reached the age where drinking in the hotel bar seems like a really appealing proposition.
The biggest danger was stepping over plastic wine bottles that you couldn't see in the dark. I think that was the biggest danger we had.
Was that just like a general London thing, or that was specific to the concert?
That was just as a concert.
Oh, okay.
Thousands and thousands of empty bottles just scattered around that you can't see in the dark. Dark bottles on dark grass is perfect camouflage for a broken ankle.
You know, I guess they would have to sell plastic bottles, but I was just thinking about here in Canada, I don't think we sell wine at concerts. Or if we do, I don't think you get bottles. Like, I think you get...
You've never lived.
Yeah, I guess. Isn't that interesting concern about wanging the bottle at someone, though? I mean, you guys have a history of this.
The thing that they started doing a few years ago at sporting events was that they'd give you a plastic bottle and take the top, as though you couldn't smuggle one in if you were really that way inclined.
Yeah.
It's not like they're hard to find. And now, of course, you've got bottles here in the UK where they're attached, so you can't take the top off. So I'm not sure what's going on. As you were confused by.
Yeah, I was baffled by this. I thought, why is this attached? I'm a grown-up, and I realized, no, it's, apparently, yeah.
Yeah, we've got a real problem, apparently, with bottle tops.
Your country has unique challenges, I will say that.
I mean, anybody who's that way inclined to put something in a bottle of some kind of fluid that they need to expel rather than go to a toilet will probably not really be fussed about that, and that's even worse. Because then you've got a loose bottle full of trailing liquid.
Oh, man.
Covering a wider area. I suppose it depends on the event you go to. It's not the kind of thing you would expect to see at a Pulp concert, I have to say.
Well, I mean, I assume it's because the average age of the fans, it takes them too long to pee.
Yeah, and you might put your shoulder out throwing something like that.
That too. I've told you before, back when I used to work at the Bottle Depot, we would get piss bottles. People would come in with like garbage bags full of bottles. And of course you have to sort them into the different kinds. If the guy was a trucker or something like that, there would be a bottle full of, a capped bottle full of urine. I don't know why they didn't just throw it away, because we never gave them money for them. And there was no shame. They were just like, deal with it. And so what we would do is, and I'm not proud of this, but we didn't want to deal with it. So there was a grassy area between the prefab hut where the Bottle Depot was and the chain link fence that separated us from the next industrial yard over. So we just chucked them in the tall grass. So it is entirely possible that a bunch of plastic bottles full of trucker pee are going to be basically, until the heat death of the universe, located there in rural Revelstoke.
Yeah, it's a worldwide phenomenon, that, especially, I think, for anybody who's driving long distances, which makes you worry, because I would imagine some people have got that skill down that they can do that whilst they're driving.
Oh, I have no doubt. I mean, have you seen these the P golf clubs?
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called, but you just like unscrew the top. And I mean, I don't know who would be okay with you whipping that out on the green.
I've never seen anybody use one. And if anybody ever needs the call of nature playing golf, you just run behind the nearest set of trees.
Honestly, it is so undignified, this notion of peeing into a golf club in front of your friends, that I can't think of anything you could do otherwise that would be worse. Like you could drop a crap on the green, and I think that would be more honorable than this golf club. And folks, this is a real thing. We're not kidding. This is called the the Euro Club.
Just get behind a tree. Everybody else does.
That's it. There are 100 ways to avoid this, none of which involve pulling out your genitals in front of your friends and sticking them into a golf club.
You can tell you're playing at a good golf club, because usually they'll have a toilet facility, usually every sort of 6 holes.
Oh, that makes sense.
I'd be concerned if you can't hang on for 3.5 hours, though. Mind you, some people take a 6-pack with them and get shit-faced playing golf, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was I don't know about now, but when I was younger, that was a big thing in Revelstoke. They would actually have like a golf cart with a little trailer full of beer. It was more about the beer than it was the golfing, I suspect.
I've been at golf clubs where they've come around on a trolley, the staff, and offered you various forms of refreshment.
Well, this wasn't the staff. This was my family.
Oh, yeah, people. Oh, yeah, I've played golf with people with packs of beer in their bag.
Right.
Or in the golf buggy. Yeah, it's pretty standard, especially if it's a golf day or something like that. There's always somebody opening a can at 10 a.m. So they've got out of their house for the day, so they're going to get shit-faced.
I mean, I don't have a problem with that. I'm quite open to breakfast beers. I'm just not down for the golf club pee trick.
Yeah, I'm not, but I'm always standing behind them, though. I'm not standing in front of somebody taking a shot who's been drinking all day. Bugger that.
Well, okay, that's fair. I thought you meant peeing. I was like, where is this going?
No, well, I wouldn't want to be downwind from that either.
Depends on the prevailing wind, I guess.
Exactly. Always stand upwind, and they can't scent you when you sneak up behind them.
Well, okay, I don't want to know any more about where this is going.
It's how Bigfoot hunts.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, actually. I was recently on an episode of Streaming Into Madness, which is Tanya's podcast, where they talk about new like horror movies. And we did the movie Frogman. And he, at one point, they have a thing where like Frogman takes a bride. And I thought, you've just taken this from Willow Creek. This is absolutely taken from Willow Creek. And Willow Creek, I'm going to say, did it better.
It's also, one of the key things of the original version of Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's version, obviously, which is cut out of a lot of the films. There's only the Branagh one that has that actual part of the story in the film.
Oh, yeah, because he wants him to make him a bride.
Yeah, and he refuses, and then they fall out, and then obviously he gets his revenge.
Right, because he kills his sister bride.
Well, his adopted sister who becomes his wife.
Yeah, it's still weird. All this shit that's happening on porn sites right now, it's all Mary Shelley's fault. You know what I'm talking about, folks. I'm not going to say it, but you know what I mean. And it's weird. It's weird. All Mary Shelley's fault. It's your stepmom. What are you doing?
The Garment Ghost. We work in the garment district of Midtown Manhattan, where many generations of office workers have come and gone and accidents have happened over the years. Directly across from my boss's office is an abandoned floor space which has not had tenants since we moved in here 5 years ago. Every once in a while, when I'm in meetings with him, I notice workers shuffling across the empty office space, some in clothes that look dated. They are flesh and blood, nothing ethereal or otherworldly about them. They move and take up the space the same as colleagues on the floors above and below them. I'd always assumed that they were contractors or construction workers looking to remodel the space. I was usually too busy with what my boss was saying to think anything about it. The other day, when I was in my morning meeting, I noticed that one of them, a young gentleman seemingly in his 20s or 30s, had an appearance that looked off. As I looked directly at him, staring out of the window, I thought for a split second I could see right through him. Then, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I've been seeing ghosts every day for the last 5 years. Since the building is pre-war and likely industrial, if I'm a ghost, that's likely to be a place I want to be hanging out in. Is it possible that ghosts can be shuffling around an office, working like they did in life, and appear like that all day, every day? Could this have been an industrial accident or disaster that's somehow leading them to keep haunting this same space? What could I be seeing, and is it possibly paranormal? This has been weighing on my mind all weekend.
I mean, we've talked about this before on here, this idea that odds are we're actually seeing more of this, more of these things than we think we are. It's just that they don't look particularly spooky.
Absolutely. It's only when someone's dressed strangely or unfashionably that they become noticeable. But I think it's harder to spot certain styles in the modern era because I think fashion is far more fluid these days.
We sort of do live in a weird era for that. We don't really, I would argue, I don't know that we have a signature look in the modern era. Everything is sort of this mishmash of the past. I assume because we've made such a fucking hash of the world, we're just trying to escape into the past in order to avoid facing what we've done. But maybe that's just me.
I'm not sure. I think it's, and certain things always come back into style, but it is peculiar. I mean, I often chuckle about some of the old photos of the UK, sort of up to about 1950, and essentially every man is wearing a suit and a hat.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. If I could afford to wear a suit and a hat, I would, but I cannot. So instead I wear Hawaiian shirts and a number of these lovely Brett Manning shirts like the one I'm wearing now.
Well, I always say if you can't get in somewhere with trainers on, it's usually not worth going into, unless, of course, it's a wedding or a funeral or some other church-related activity where one has to dress up and look smart. I'm not suggesting you should wear trainers with suits. It's not 1988, and I'm not in Miami Vice.
I was going to say, yeah, if you're not Phil Collins, do not wear tennis shoes with a suit.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Always wear appropriate footwear for the wedding, funeral, or ass-kicking contest. This is free advice from us here at the Ghost Story Guys. Going back to the story, though, I was thinking, I don't know a lot about ghosts in New York City. I just don't. I had a look around, and there are some fairly famous stories, but not a lot. And one that I found, and I think this is probably the most famous one that I'm aware of, although there may be more, I'm sure there are. Again, I'm not familiar with it, but the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. Are you familiar with the case?
No, I'm not. My knowledge of New York is quite limited to the disco scene and the mob.
Okay, well, that's fair.
And
that's
music.
Fair. So I believe it was actually March 25th, I think 1911. It was a garment factory in the Ash Building in New York City. It's actually part of the NYU campus now, I think it's called the Brown Building. They made women's blouses, and they were on the 8th, 9th, and 10th floors. And there was a fire. And because these women who worked there were mostly Jewish, Italian, and German immigrants, and, you know, this was still the time when you could treat industrial workers like indentured servants. I mean, this is still actually happening in some places, but they would lock the doors close so no one could rob the company of time. So when the fire broke out, these people could not get out. And I believe something like 140-ish women died in that fire, similar to, as we'll briefly touch on with the attacks of September 11th, 2001, some of the women went out the window because it was that or burn alive. And it's horrific, horrific stuff. But supposedly, students at the Brown Building, NYU students, will still sometimes see women fleeing down the hallways. Supposedly, there is also a specter, or at least one, possibly more, which can be seen jumping out the window. Yeah. Horrific shit. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it remains the deadliest industrial disaster in New York City and one of the deadliest in the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S., of course, has a long history. Well, I shouldn't say, well, a fairly long history. I mean, there's the Hamlet chicken plant disaster. Are you familiar with this?
No.
So this was a chicken processing plant in Hamlet, North Carolina. On September 5th, 1991, it caught fire. And it was the same thing. Management chained the door closed so people couldn't rip the company off for their time. 25 people were killed and 54 were injured. I'd like to say that's rare, but it's not. You know, if you ever have anyone who bitches about regulations, tell them this is why we have regulations. I know they're a pain in the ass, but you know what's even more of a pain in the ass? Having the people you care about die in an industrial fire.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of reasons that things have been changed. I mean, we had countless mining disasters here.
Oh, God, yeah, mining. You had, yeah, no, you guys have had a million industrial disasters, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But there's one fairly local where the majority of the victims were children.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, well,
Jesus
children
Christ.
Children were still working down the pits to the late 19th century here.
I had no idea.
Yeah. A lot of them used to work as trappers, which is basically they used to sit in a hole and open and close shutters to let fresh air in.
Good Lord.
And they do that for 12 hours a day.
What's fucked up is I keep hearing more and more about people trying to pass laws to let children go back to work in those kinds of settings. It's like we just have this collective amnesia. Or the people running things now are so, so soulless that they're fine putting children in danger in order to keep the money coming to them.
Well, most of the legislation that, you know, because loads of our industrial revolutionary trades involved a lot of work for women and children. You know, the cotton mills, you'd have the kids running under all the looms, you know, going at miles an hour, pulling bits of them off if they got caught, like ripping their arms off and scalping them and all sorts, and kids down the mine and stick them up a chimney. I mean, you call that, you know, we're supposed to be an enlightened society, and it seems sometimes certain people in certain sections of society are determined to drag us back to the dark ages.
Yeah, you're not wrong, man. You're not wrong.
All for money.
Money that we're not getting. I like that. Not to make this the fucking socialist guys, but these rich motherfuckers are just squeezing every dime out of these processes. And that money is not going to the people helping them make it. It's going up. And it pisses me off because rent and groceries are expensive.
Right on, comrade.
That's right. Seize the means of production.
Trotsky would be proud.
I guess what happens when you have too many cans of carbonated water to get the Trotskys. And just to be clear, folks, I don't want communism. I just want more money. We all deserve more money. All right, so our last New York story tonight comes from Megan. And this is a much more New York story than most of the others, save for perhaps the Garment Ghost. Some of those stories could theoretically be anywhere, but both Garment Ghost and I feel like this one are inextricably tied to the city. Megan says, I am writing to you about an experience I had this January when I was visiting New York with friends. On the agenda for the morning was the 9/11 Memorial and Museum. As someone who has very little memory of the events, as I was very young at the time, I was intrigued to see the museum, but knew little more about the events past the fact that two hijacked planes had hit the Twin Towers and they had collapsed with great loss of life. We came out of the subway station into the Oculus, which I later found out was part of the memorial complex. As we walked up the stairs to the second level, I suddenly felt very out of breath and had a tightness in my chest. I took a deep breath in and out to try and dispel the feeling, but it didn't go away, to the point that my friends noticed and asked if I was okay. I said I was fine, and we looked around the Oculus for a bit before going out into the street. When we got outside, it was snowing lightly. I asked one of my friends who had been to the museum before how far we had to walk to get there. He just pointed across the road, and I hadn't realized just how close the subway was to Ground Zero. I was taken aback, I can't lie. We went across the road and looked at the waterfall memorials for a while before heading into the museum. My spatial awareness is mediocre at best, and it took me a while to realize that the museum was located in the foundations of the towers. Before I even realized this, as we were going down the first escalator, the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, even though I was wearing a heavy coat and scarf. We dropped our coats and backpacks in the cloakroom and went down the second escalator. About halfway down, something very strange happened. I flinched as a loud roaring noise and screaming cut through the air for a split second before cutting out. Over the next minute or so, this horrible noise kept cutting in and out like I was covering and uncovering my ears in quick succession. I have a bit of a reputation among my friends for having weird experiences, so when I flinched and made a face, my friends asked me what was wrong for the second time that day. I explained that I was hearing screaming and roaring. We continued into the museum, and I think it is the best museum I've ever been to, with plenty of mixed media that dealt with such an awful event in a truthful, yet sensitive and respectful way. And I would highly recommend it to anyone going to New York, even though it is a very emotional experience. I only had one other odd experience while in the museum. There is a fire truck in the exhibition, which is burnt out, and I swear I saw someone sitting in the front passenger seat. They looked so convincingly real that I thought it was strange they allowed museum goers to sit in it. However, when I blinked, they were gone. We made our way through the rest of the museum and left. Ever since I was there, I've had an interest in the events of that day, and had only started looking up news reports and eyewitness footage from the time in the last week. Watching a news report from Eyewitness News, I realized that the roaring sound I had heard in the museum was not the buildings on fire, but the South Tower collapsing. Ever since seeing a video of the collapse on YouTube, I can't get it out of my head. It really was a perfect match to what I heard on the escalator. In all of my other weird experiences, I have never had such a visceral, crystal-clear auditory experience. I can't find any similar experiences online, and I wonder if there are any others. So, Megan, I've emailed you separately. Still, thank you very much for sharing that. And from what I have gathered, from my own experiences at the 9/11 Museum and the experiences I've found online, that is not uncommon. I don't know about the auditory experience. Part of me wonders if maybe there was some kind of audio element to the installation that you were hearing, but everything else you've described, the heaviness, the chills, that is very common with visitors to Ground Zero. Again, that was very much my experience when I was there.
Yes. It's an event that shouldn't be enmeshed in my psyche as much as it was. But I, unfortunately, on the 11th of September, was stuck in an office from 3 p.m. till 11 p.m. with a giant screen next to me that wasn't turned off that showed live news footage for 8 hours. So I saw everything that happened from 3 p.m. till 11 p.m. and some of the images that I saw that day will never be removed from my mind.
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. When I realized I was getting old was when I started meeting people who didn't really have any memory of that day, who had they didn't really have any concrete sense of the significance of what happened. And yeah. I know some people get all salty about that, you know, kids nowadays, all that shit. But I mean, it's just the nature of things, you know, time moves on. And if you weren't there, if it wasn't a part of your life, if you weren't, you know, you're not going to have the feeling for it that we might, you know, because I remember I was sleeping. I was in Revelstoke. I was sleeping. I was still living at my mom's house. I graduated that summer, and I don't think I moved out till the winter or early spring of 2002, but I was laying in bed and I heard the phone ring, and I ran down the hallway because there was a phone upstairs, and I picked it up, and it was my mom. She was working over at our store, Bocce's, and she started explaining what was happening to me. I had literally just finished reading Tom Clancy's Without Remorse, which concludes with terrorists crashing hijacked airliners into the Capitol Dome. Hey there, sports fans. So this is me coming in way after the fact. I realized as I was editing this episode that I got the name of the book wrong. Without Remorse is a Tom Clancy novel, but it is not the one that ends the way I am describing. That book is Debt of Honor. So just in case there are any hardcore Tom Clancy fans in our audience, and you thought, Bren, you screwed that one up, I have arrived with a correction. And now back to our regularly scheduled programming. And when I say just, I mean, within a week of this happening, I had read that book. And I remember when she was explaining this to me, I was trying to tell her, like, no, that's a book. That's not real. That's a thing. Like, that's fiction. And she said, you know, turn on the fucking television. And I did. And of course, I saw, I think it was, they were called the Second Tower had just been hit. And I spent the rest of the day at the store. We all went over to the store and we watched it there. We had a television behind the counter for the staff. And it was, I mean, again, if you are listening and you weren't really kind of aware at that time, you know, if you're too young, that changed the world. That changed the Western world, at least. It changed air travel. It changed the way people relate to each other, especially in North America, especially in America. You know, it changed a lot of shit, and it's kind of hard to impress. I mean, I guess, you know, you live through COVID, so you have an idea of that. But imagine COVID in a day, if you can. I mean, obviously the death toll of COVID was much higher, but, and yes, it was, If you're going, but maybe, no, shut up. It was. You're wrong. But imagine, you know, the cumulative psychic effect of that in a day, basically. It was just a horrifying, nightmarish event. And I'm not surprised it's left an impression. I mean, what, 3,000 people died that day?
Yeah, just under, I think. But the other addition of that is obviously the ramifications, the number of people that have ended up contracting disease afterwards through, you know, piling into rubble to try and rescue people and help.
Oh, yeah.
All ended up, you know, there's a lot of people that have ended up getting, I think it is an actual phenomenon, isn't it? 9/11 related cancer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was watching a program the other day with a homicide detective in New York who's been diagnosed with cancer that he caught from the collapse of the buildings because of the chemicals.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I just finished listening to the book, The Only Plane in the Sky, An Oral History of 9/11. And again, just like Gotham and Greater Gotham are your go-to resources if you want to know more about the wider history of New York, if you want a really effective breakdown of that day, read or listen to, as I did, the Only Plane in the Sky. And one of the things I found, I mean, I found the book very affecting. It actually took me a while to listen to it because I found myself getting emotional at numerous places. But yeah, when the first responders interviewed describe what they went through that day, you know, especially after the collapse, there were so many toxic materials that were pulverized and then thrown into the air. You know, they describe feeling like you're covered with a blanket, but it's just the blanket is the air. And again, you're breathing that in, and that's just going to have long-term effects no matter how you slice it. I mean, there was one fireman they spoke to who, he said, my lungs are basically, they're shot. He said, I kept working for 2 more years, but he said, my lungs are shot. And the doctor calls it 9/11 lung. And it's just because, again, of all the different building materials and things that were in there were just pulverized by the collapsing forces and then aerosolized.
Yeah, you've only got to imagine how much glass was in the air.
That too, yep.
That'd just shred you.
Yeah, oh yeah, glass, sadly. Concrete, insulation, none of that shit is meant for your lungs, you know. This is not a good time.
No, it's one of those strange things because I remember precisely what happened because I used to listen to, got a radio station here in the UK called 5 Live, and I would always listen to it during the day because I was working, I was at college in the day and I was doing, working in IT at night till 11 o'clock. And so I was listening to it and they reported it that it sounded like a plane had accidentally crashed into one of the towers. And I thought, bloody hell, that's awful. That's going to be a dreadful disaster. That's terrible. And so obviously I was getting my clothes ready for work. So I thought, well, I'll put the news on. So I put the news on and I was ironing my trousers as the second plane hit live on British telly. And as soon as it happened, my phone rang. And it was a friend of mine whose dad worked for GCHQ. And he just said, my dad says we're at war.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, phew. It was crazy. But it's like I say, I can't ever forget that day because I was basically forced to watch people die for 8 hours. It's horrific.
It was, as you say, those are impossible images to forget. You know, like for example, as we mentioned with the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, some people chose to jump instead of burn. Mm. And
the falling man.
Yeah. And that happened on September 11th, 2001. And it's, again, we're not going to dwell on that because it's horrifying. Like there's no way to yuck around it. Like that was awful fucking shit. That was traumatizing stuff. The psychic terror those poor people must have felt is beyond anything I can imagine.
Like you say, you realize you're of a certain age. It's like here when you talk to certain people and they don't remember the bombing campaigns that we had here in the UK.
Oh, the IRA bombings.
During the 80s and 90s. I was there when Canary Wharf was blown up. I wasn't near Canary Wharf, but I was in London when it happened. I was in Manchester the day the Manchester bomb went off. It's one of the loudest noises I've ever heard in my life. And I was like a mile and a half away.
Oh, my God.
So I'd been in London, and then the week after they blew up the McDonald's, when I was a baby, well, not a baby, I was a bear, and I was about 8 or 9, I think. First time I'd ever been to London, actually. And so it seemed to be something that I wouldn't say we got immune to it, but it was certainly, it's one of those things like we joke about the 80s being a kid and being told what to do if Russia bombed us and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we'd all, you end up having this kind of gallows humour, this black humoured response to it, because you're dealing with situations you have absolutely no control over. And if it happens, it happens. And, you know, it's a bloody awful thing. I mean, it's one of those strange things. It's why I always sit in the middle carriages of a train if I can. Because I'm thinking, well, if we get hit from the front or hit from the back, I've got a good chance of being all right here.
Hey, smart.
I always like to be on the aisle seat on a plane. I've seen enough documentaries about that. It's the best place you'll survive.
Oh, yeah. I always pick an aisle seat.
Stayed up too late, too stoned, watching programs like this. I don't intend to fly over the Amazon at any point.
Smart, yeah. An old journalist friend of mine also told me, stay out of helicopters with German tourists.
What?
That was, he said when he was always on the wire, the news wire, that was always the story. Whenever there was a helicopter crash, it was always German tourists on board. He said, German tourists have terrible luck with helicopters, so.
Okay, I'll bear that in mind going forward. I've never been in a helicopter yet.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. It's like a plane, but slower. I wasn't impressed. I mean, that's not true. Nick, for my birthday once, Nick, when we were in Vegas, she took me on a flyover of the Strip in a helicopter. So, and I believe that was my only helicopter-based experience. But I don't know, man. I'm meant to be on the ground. I'm not meant. The other couple of weeks back, I stopped at McDonald's on my way home from somewhere. And it was at the same business park as the Flying Squirrel Trampoline Park.
Oh, yes.
And I looked at the sign and I thought, I cannot think of a worse place for me. I am not meant to be in the sky. All right, so we went a little far afield there, but that was our Ghosts of New York show. Like we said, it was a little light on stories as far as what I was able to find for first person in New York City itself. But one of the reasons we wanted to do this was a bit of a lure, and we're hoping that maybe some of our listeners in and around the New York City area will share their stories with us. And if you're one of those people, please do send it in. GhostStoryGuys@gmail.com is the way to do it. Again, we are always looking to do listener story shows, and we are fascinated. I am personally fascinated by New York City. And again, we must seize the means of production so I have more money to go there. Currently, I do not. Right now, the closest I can go is Detroit. If neither of us want me to go visit Detroit.
Hey, I'm not saying anything about Detroit. They're no longer the worst NFL team in the league anymore. It's my team.
Oh, no.
So I can't say anything. Not for long, though.
There we go. I have faith. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our Ghost Wars shoutouts. Hey there, listeners. Before you reach for that skip 15 seconds ahead button, I promise you this isn't an ad. We wanted to take a minute to talk to you about mental health. On this show, I've always tried to be as honest and open as possible about my struggles with depression and anxiety, because even though we've come a long way towards acknowledging the very real damage these things can do, there is still way too much lingering stigma about reaching out for help. And when you start to feel like there's no help, it's easy to start feeling like there's no hope. But Paul has joined me today to remind you there is always hope and there's always help.
We're not going to try and talk you out of self-harming right now, because we know that's not how it works. Instead, what we wanted to do was tell you something now and hope that should things get bad, you'll remember it and make a phone call or send a text message before you make any permanent decisions. As someone who knows all too well just how important mental health can be, it's never too late to reach out.
In Canada, the number to call is 133-456-4566. In the USA, the new number to call is 988. That's 988.
In the UK, the number to call is 116-123 or text SHOUT. That's SHOUT. To 85258. In Australia, the number to call is 131114.
However bad shit seems, it will pass, And no matter what your brain might be telling you at any given moment, and believe me when I say, I know this intimately, there are people who love you and people who care deeply about how you treat yourself. Should a time come when you find yourself despairing, please know that we've both been where you are, and there is a way back to the world. Take care. Welcome back. The Ghost Story Guys are Luke Greensmith, who helps us find our stories and is the host of the Luke Lore Podcast, available on podcast platforms everywhere. Tanya Downing, who helps with our editing and manages our Facebook community. You can find her co-hosting the Streaming Into Madness podcast with Walter Whitaker. That, too, is on streaming platforms everywhere. Adam Lynch edits our video. He is co-host of Weekly Creep, which you can find on YouTube and, of course, on podcast platforms everywhere. Joseph Camo manages our YouTube account. He is the creator of the Philosophy Professor YouTube channel, which you will find linked, along with everyone else, in the show notes at ghoststoryguys.com. Sarah Kent manages our Reddit community.
Our supernatural steamboat captain is Mr. Brennan Stoll.
And my co-host is the one, the only, the inimitable Paul Bestel, the paranormal Johnny Carson himself, host of Mysteries and Monsters. Paul, what's coming up on M&M?
This week, I'm diving into one of my favorite mysteries of the modern era, which is the strange case of the Yuba County Five.
I am very excited for the show.
A tragic and heartbreaking story that makes no sense 46 years on.
That is it's a compelling mystery, folks. If you don't know it already, Paul educated me on it on our last Patreon live stream, and I've been reading a little bit since. It is fascinating shit, so you are not going to want to miss that.
And then plenty of supernatural episodes coming down the pipeline. I've got a Haunted Histories episode coming up, as well as a trip to good old Virginia. And I dive into the haunted inns and hotels of that fair state.
Very cool. And where can we find you online?
You can find Mysteries and Monsters across all social media platforms, apart from ones owned by Menchild.
I feel like that's all of them, or most of them. So we need to be more specific.
Okay. You can find Mysteries and Monsters across all social media platforms, apart from the ones with one letter in their name, and also across all podcast aggregators and sites.
I am Largely the Truth on Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd. You can find my other show, Weird Together, where Joseph Camo and I dive into independent horror films on streaming platforms everywhere. We just launched our second season of Weird Together with an episode on the indie film First Time Caller, which answers the question, how could the apocalypse be linked to butt stuff? Which seems oddly fitting now, given the start of the show. All right. Well, like we said at the top of the show, we can only do this because of our patrons and Apple Podcast subscribers. Really, really, really thank you guys from the bottom of our terrible, terrible hearts. Now, if you want to join the team to get bonus shows, our monthly live show, which is always hoot, that's like anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours of unfiltered me and Paul shooting the shit with you guys about all manner of nerdery and paranormal goings on, plus bonus shows. There are hours and hours and hours of material for you guys to catch up on, stretching back, well, I guess, almost 4 years at this point, 3 years. So you can get access to all of that at patreon.com/ghoststoryguys or by signing up to GSG Premium via Apple Podcasts. And of course, there's one tier which holds a special place in our heart. One tier that makes you, I'm going to say it, better than everyone else. That makes you part of an elite club we like to call Ghost Force. That's right. Patrons at the $20 level and above are members of Ghost Force and get thanked here every second episode because you might be as crazy as we are, possibly more so, because I wouldn't give me money. You should see what I do with money. My fridge is full of expensive cheese and diet soda, soda, soda.
Oh, tasty.
You are not wrong. This time around, the members of Ghost Force are...
Atham Saragot.
Big Titty Kitty.
Bran wears a pink tutu.
Cackling Skull.
Carrie Lambertus.
Cheryl Baker.
Crazy Mom.
CT.
Bethany Michaud.
Flowy Two Hats.
Generic Bob.
Hannah Brown.
Anner Siemens.
Hillary Dissassoon.
Jade Morse.
Jenny Bananani. Is that right? I think I might be putting an extra syllable in there, but for my gag to work, it's got to be Jenny Bananani. So if that's wrong...
Jenny Banani.
Shut up. Jenny Bananani.
That works for me. Jason R. Slaughter.
Slaughter. Jennifer Mullen.
Joseph Como.
Kimberly Hansen.
Malevolent Clamato.
Mara Noriega.
Mark Semler.
Merlin Hansen. I'm trying to do the Mario thing. It doesn't work for everyone. Anyways, Merlin Hansen. I can do better. Merlin Hansen. Sorry, Merlin. That was half-assed. Merlin Hansen.
Whoa. Radical.
Raw. You said radical. That's all I got. I don't know what's going on here, Paul.
Michael Caine.
Nicola.
Peter Gunn, 08.5.
Rebecca Brink.
Robin Teen.
Ruck and Ronnie Shenanigans.
Samantha Ellis.
Shannon Steyer.
Stefan Schwarzwald.
And Trent Cannon. You are the few. You are the spooky. You are Ghost Force.
For real, guys, thank you so much. Again, we appreciate all our patrons and Apple Podcast subscribers, but Ghost Force, man, you guys are crazy and we love you for it. So thank you. And if you want to join the team, head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. Again, that's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. Or sign up to GSD Premium via Apple Podcasts. Do you have any guest spots coming up?
Not right now. Obviously, I've just appeared on High Strangeness with Steve Ward, which was a jolly good chat as I sidestepped several issues and moved swiftly on to other aspects. So nothing at the moment coming down. I've got some coming down the pipeline, but nothing confirmed as yet.
All right. I was actually on a show for a change. I was a guest host on Streaming Into Madness with Tanya. Walter was not able to attend a recording. I stepped in and we talked about the film Frogman. I tried to be nice. But if you want to find out why karma is a trampoline, listen to that episode of Streaming Into Madness. And I was also a guest recently of Reeves over on Paratalk. That episode, I think, should be coming out soon. It's not out yet, but when it does, we will post it up on our socials. And of course, you'll find both mine, Paul, and actually everyone involved with the show. Anytime someone does a guest spot, you'll find it in the blog at ghoststoryguys.com.
Always a good time with Reeves.
Oh yeah, he's a great dude. If you want to pick up any Ghost Story Guys merch, head to our website at ghoststoryguys.com. You'll find all kinds of cool stuff there. We got t-shirts, stickers, travel mugs, all kinds of great gear. And you do eventually get a thank you video from us. I broke my phone, so I'm using an old phone right now, so I haven't yet logged back into our account for that. So I think I've got a few alerts waiting for me that we have not done yet. But you will get a thank you video from me and Paul if you buy something at ghoststoryguys.com. Don't forget, if you like the music you hear on the show, you can stream it on streaming platforms everywhere. Search for Ghost Story Guys Season 6 and Season 7, courtesy of Rainy Days for Ghosts. Again, that is streaming on Spotify, Apple Music, all those good places, courtesy of our label, Night Harvest Recordings. Speaking of Rainy Days for Ghosts, shout out to them. Again, that is the work of Harper Smith. You can find more of Harper's work at rainydaysforghosts.bandcamp.com or by searching for them on streaming platforms everywhere. Our theme song, Radio, Into the Darkness We Go, is composed and performed by Peter Kursov of Pizzanta Music. Find more from him by searching for Pizzanta Music wherever you get your tunes. And again, that is streaming courtesy of Night Harvest Recordings. Paul, my friend, we made it. I mean, the audience thinks we made it. We still have a whole show to record. But
yes.
You and I, we have made it to the end of this particular part of the recording. And I guess that's going to do it.
Well, if my ribs can survive the next 2 hours, we'll see you. We'll be back next week. But until then,
into the darkness we go. It's 1933. Brennan Paul are making butthole jokes. It's 1985. Brennan Paul are making butthole jokes. It's 2024. Brent and Paul are making butthole jokes.
I've been on a plane that dropped 10,000 feet through turbulence.
Terrifying. Terrifying.
It's a good job we were watching Spider-Man 2 when that happened, otherwise I would have been scared. There's the subway fight scene as well. It was just sort of like being an early precursor of 4DX.
Or not caviar, if you think caviar is gross. Gross, salty nonsense.
Created in labs, of course, not from Sturgeon.
There we go. Yep, lab grown. Anyways, we're getting away from the point here.
That's me. Oh, boy. We still got a show to record. This is not good. First the Manhattan butt thing, now this. Oh, boy.
Did you say Michael Carney?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.